still waiting for your record to leak. Leaked.
So right now it's 8:24. At midnight tonight, the world's going to end.
Is that what he says, midnight?
Yeah. According to Harold Camping, a former civil engineer who now hangs out in the Bay Area. And he started this evangelical radio station. So he put together this half-assed formula, and he calculated when the end of the world is, or the rapture, when the rapture is supposed to happen. And he came up with May 21st.
Midnight, though, like May 21st, boom, done.
Well, actually, the way it goes is at midnight, there's supposed to be this earthquake that's supposed to, like, you know, be devastating. And supposed to cast out all the unsaved from their graves, and then the people who are believers are transported to heaven. And then 5 months later, in October, God's going to come down and destroy everything else. So that's his take on the end of the world. So we only have a few more hours.
Like, literally, I haven't even eaten dinner. I'm not even going to have a last meal. I still got to sew a pair of pants just in case that doesn't happen. I have to stitch a fucking crotch in a pair of my pants.
I did a little research into how he came up with this date. And I was actually, you know, pretty interested, you know, because the Mayans have this this sort of stargazing approach to their whole thing. And I thought it was, like, involved with, you know, some sort of astronomical alignment, or, you know,
judging
some
by the
cosmic happening or whatever.
I'm assuming.
But apparently it's almost arbitrary. The guy just came up, he has five numbers. 5, 10, and 17. For some reason, 5 means atonement.
10 is a very religious, so that's like a completion, right? Completion.
Exactly, completion. And then 17 represents heaven. I didn't pick up on 17. I know that 5 and 10... 7.
11 is not a, it's a good number for us, but not a good number for him.
Yeah, those numbers are all over, like, the Book of Revelation.
And 12 is another like highly religious number, but 11's like the outcast.
So his formula is basically he just takes these numbers, multiplies them together, and then squares that. Okay? And then he comes up with a number, and that number is 722,500. All right? Now, that represents the number of days after Jesus' crucifixion, which is also a fairly arbitrary date, too. And that's how he came up with May 21st, 2011.
That's one of those things where, like, someone shows you, like, a game where, like, put your name and your birthday, and, like, you do all this adding, times that by 44 or plus 10, and it comes out to, like, the same number all the time.
Yeah.
No matter what you do. It's one of those... that's not enough proof for me.
It sounds fishy, I think. The more I think about it, the more offended I get. Because, you know...
Because he didn't even really give it a whirl.
No, like, he didn't. It's like anyone could have come up with that sort of formula, you know? And
it's
in fact,
even a full page of research information.
No, man. It's there's not much to it. You know, the guy's background is in engineering, you know? So he figured he'd know a little bit about math. And he didn't do a very good job. So he's making all these claims that even true believers may not be saved, and even if you're totally squared away with Christ, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to rise to heaven. So I feel a little let down by his methodology of coming up with this date. You know, furthermore, back in 1994, he also predicted the end of the world, and 1994 that came and went too. So.
And what was his? What was his story like the next day when he woke up and he's like, shit?
I don't know. That's unknown. I mean, I think probably he wanted to keep
that off Wikipedia.
He wanted to wipe that off Wikipedia and keep that on the DL. The first time around, his date was September 5th, 1994, and that day obviously came and went. Since we're sitting here right now, hanging out, waiting on his next prediction. So yeah, man, a few more hours. And that's, it's all she wrote.
If you had a little more, I mean, the end of the world is always a button or two away, if you ask me.
Exactly.
To an extent. Yeah. You know, there's always, everything crumbles and gets rebuilt at some point. Something's going to happen, whether it's in this lifetime or not. But at midnight, the earthquake and the this, he's a little too out of his mind.
Yeah, it's a little thin for me, you know. At least the Mayas had you know, some sort of, well, the thing is with the Mayans, it's like the Spanish came, and when they came over to South America, they pretty much wiped out all of their records. So any kind of information that's available about, you know, the ancient Mayan culture is almost pretty much all speculation, really. I mean, you know, people had to interpret their, read, you know, all of their writing and whatnot. And so everything is all filtered through, like, what Europeans think. So even their whole trip of, you know, 2012 being the end of their calendar.
Guy got tired.
Yeah, the guy got tired. He just finished. He just, you know. But so if that happens, then you guys won't be doing those dates with Marduk.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I won't be doing anything. Actually, I won't even be doing coffee tomorrow morning.
Maybe, maybe you're one of the guys who's going to be saved.
I highly doubt that. I think I'll be one of the first to fall into the cracks. And I'd be okay with that. But,
yeah. Even being concerned with that sort of stuff is kind of like, you can't really think too much about it.
Yeah, I don't even think about politics and about the real, you know, worries about ending and annihilation. I've just shrugged all that shit off, sort of.
Well, the real truth of the matter is no one really knows what's true. I mean, there's even people saying that Bin Laden had been murdered years ago.
I can see that in a heartbeat, you know?
Yeah.
I'd rather see, like, you can't edit this, right?
I can edit it, yeah.
I'd rather see Bret Michaels dead than Bin Laden. I'd get more of a thrill out of reading that. You can leave that in if you
want. Yeah, totally.
Like, really? I have mixed feelings about that whole thing. Like, I almost don't even give a shit because it seems like a game, like a, you know? I'm into it. I was even checking out Al Jazeera's website just to see what the actual, like, you know, let's see what's going on over there with their news.
Right.
And it was almost the same as BBC or anything. You know, at that point, Al Qaeda had made it known that it was official that he's dead and this and that. And I just feel I'm never going to know who to trust or where to get an answer from, so I'm done. To an extent. You know, I like to know what's going on, but I'm over caring.
You know, Scandato was supposed to be here tonight, too.
Of course, he doesn't want to take seven trains.
Well, he was going to come, but he's going to see Anathema play tonight. So he was going to try to make it, but the schedules, everyone's schedules kind of got pushed a little bit.
What's his take on the end?
Well, he made an interesting point saying that in the Bible, there, it's clearly stated that the only person who knows the exact date and time when the world is going to end is God himself. So. You know, it's pretty, according to Mike Scandato, that's pretty clearly stated in the text. So you know, no one should really know. So who's this guy to claim, make all these claims with his, like, sketchy formula and mathematics on his side?
This simple math.
I figured there would be at least, like, a natural log involved or integration or some sort of, like, calculus involved instead of just straight up multiplication and then squaring the product, you know.
And a couple, two, three quotes.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm not too worried about the world ending.
If it does, I'll try to be in bed by like 10:15. Just right, I don't have to deal with it. It'll just happen.
So what else is going on in the world of Black Anvil?
We may or may not play Philadelphia tomorrow. So I'll pack anyway for a day. We have that and the Marduk dates, and that's about it.
Which is it? How many dates are the Marduk dates? How long is
it's,
that?
It's six. They're doing seven, but it's six for us.
And R and Noir is on all those dates?
And that's, I believe, the I saw some Book of Revelation wording around the flyers and that. Seven Bowls of Wrath. That's what they're calling their seven dates.
I see. I
believe it has something to do with the box set and seven records being in it. But
well, seven also is like one, you know, as you know, a significant number in the Book of Revelations. There's seven plagues, you know, the seven cities.
Trumpets.
You know, so there, that's a pretty significant number as well. This isn't the first time you guys have shared the stage with Marduk.
This is going to be technically the third run.
Really?
They did those three makeup shows for the Mayhem tour that fell apart. We did those. Then we did select dates on the Knock Misty and Merrimack tour. And now we're doing this with them in Oranmore.
Are you looking forward to this?
Absolutely. It's markets that we've hit before a good bunch of times. So the fact that we don't get out much, I'm glad to sort of keep nailing the places that are a little out of driving distance that we can actually hit.
Have you guys written any new songs since the record came out?
A lot of new stuff, but nothing really formed. Maybe about a good 4 or 5 skeletons, but nothing complete.
Are you guys still rehearsing in that same building down by McCarran Park?
We're just doing hourly studios.
Oh.
Yeah.
We're finally moving into that building because initially when we were supposed to be rehearsing there, but when we came back from tour, the landlord had given us the old switcheroo and put us on in North 6, on the building in North 6th Street. They have two buildings there.
What building is that?
It's right next to American Apparel.
Is it the old Coyote Studios? Is it that place?
I can't figure out whether or not it's the old Coyote Studios or not. Because
if you're looking at American Apparel, is it to the right?
If you're looking at American Apparel, it's directly to the right.
Yeah, Coyote Studios.
Yeah, it looks like a studio used to be in the base. It's a basement complex, so it looks like there's it used to be a recording studio, because you see where one of the rooms actually looks like a control room. But it's terrible, because now that, you know, Williamsburg has changed quite a bit since the Coyote Studios has been around, and that end of North 6th Street has become a big social...
It used to be crack vials outside of the place. Literally. There was a supermarket across the street, Tops, and there was crack vials by any dumpster you could have stood next to.
It's still unpleasant, but in a different way now. Now it's all partying youths, you know, vomiting
in
the staircase.
And I know, you know, without even having to go deeper, like, we could look at each other and have that same feeling of sort of hatred.
My new thing is not to hate anymore, Paul. I'm trying to get over that, you know, just sort of focus on myself more.
Tomorrow when you wake up alive, you'll be hateful. When you get off the train and you walk past the Charleston, it'll be in there. You just got to control it.
There's a number of reasons why I didn't like rehearsing in North 6, and not the least of which is stepping over puke and piss on Sunday morning going to rehearsal, because, you know, Saturday night, Friday night are big nights out in that part of town. So a lot of times we would come home from playing shows and there would be, we'd be greeted with like a pile of vomit and a puddle of urine to like load all of our gear through to get downstairs. So I'm really happy that the landlord was kind enough to let us move into the other building.
And this is on the 14th and Berry, or White?
Yes, is that Berry, same building. Right, I think. The same building that you guys used to rehearse in.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I like it because it has that load-in garage.
It's great.
That's another thing I hated about North 6th Street, is that you'd have to double park, and then, you know, it's mayhem on that street because there's tons of shops and restaurants. And
all times of day, it's mayhem. If you go there 8 in the morning, there's butchers
delivery,
or whatever. Yeah,
delivery trucks. Yeah, that was always the case. Whenever we'd leave, you know, to hit the road, we try to get there like before 8.
Forklifts.
And that's the worst part. That's the worst time to be there, actually. Where we, you know, because that's when there's, yeah, exactly. It's forklifts. There's guys in box trucks, like refrigerated trucks, trying to like deliver meat to the supermarket.
Plastic strips hitting you in the face.
Yeah, so it's just bad no matter what time of day you go there. And then at night, obviously, there's the nightlife crowd, you know, and that's SUVs, double parked, you know.
You always got a spot over here. You got that loading dock.
Yeah, that's...
We were in a room right by the door, like literally right there.
Yeah, it's one floor too, right? There's no basement or there's no like stairs to load.
It's one floor.
Yeah, see, that's
key. It may
key.
Be like a step or two, but nothing.
Yeah, because the at North 6th Street, there's a staircase that goes down to the basement and then a really long hallway.
See, Coyote was one level, from what I remember. There was like 2 or 3 rooms, but there was an actual studio. I know there's a control room, but I want to say there had to be more to it than just that.
I don't really remember too much about Coyote Studios because I'd only been in there once, and it was not in the studio part, but in the rehearsal area, and it was just one day. And I don't remember walking down any stairs, and that's why I didn't think this was Coyote Studios, but it could very well be. I don't know.
Either way, you close it all.
The newer place is actually a lot. You moved a lot closer. No, June 1st, if all goes well. I still won't believe it because this is like the second or third time that we were supposed to move into that building, but you know, we keep on this guy, and I think it's going to happen. So it's a lot of, you know, something to look forward to.
It's just you guys, right?
It's us and Andrew's his side project, Painted Rust. They're a death metal band. Have you heard of them?
No.
Should definitely check them out, man.
I'll find a little internet.
I drove them on their first five dates. They played a string of dates in Massachusetts, upstate New York, and down here in the city. They played one of those Monday night lit lounge.
Oh, the Metal Monday?
Metal Monday. And Precious Metal, that's what it is. And that was their first few days they played. And from day one to day five, every night they improved. And
who's in a band with them?
It's a bunch of guys from Jersey. The one guy I knew prior is Rich Emery. It's he's like an older, you know, Jersey guitar player guy, like he's came up through that whole Human Remains, Time's Up, South, you know, mid Jersey vibe. So he's like, that's the way he plays too. He has that sort of, you know, Time's Up, Dimmock, like that's kind of their trip. They're like a Jersey metal band.
So it's good. Good,
yeah,
for him.
Yeah, it's good.
Busy when he's home.
Yeah, definitely.
He's got nothing to do with.
Well, yeah.
Well, but that's gonna end soon.
What's
the being home for that long?
Yes, that's true, Paul.
Will you be bringing your new armband with you?
Maybe.
What's the next, what do you got? When's the record release? I want to say I'm going to be missing that because I'm going to be doing some work-related flying. It's like the 18th or something.
No. See? We're going to, no. The record comes out on June 7th, which is,
I will have it before then because I will be searching blogs for
it. Well, you're going to leave tonight with a copy of it.
I mean, and keep it off the blocks.
Yeah, well, you have vinyl playing methods?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'll give you a vinyl. Limited.
Oh, you have it already?
Yeah.
Done deal.
Yeah, we just got them in the mail.
Good, Gordon.
But yeah, that's when the record comes out, and then the next day we leave for tour, and it's a brief little 2-week run to start things off.
When's New York though? It's you and Panzer Bastard, right? That's the
I wish.
Is that not happening?
Well, the show's happening. However, Panzer Bastard is not playing the show with us, which is really, really a letdown.
And when is that show?
That's June 9th at the Webster Hall.
Is it a Thursday?
It's a Thursday night.
That's when I fly out from Chicago.
See, if it was a Wednesday, you would have told me that you're flying out on a Wednesday probably.
No, it's a true story. I'll show you the confirmation.
It's kind of weird.
It doesn't matter because midnight.
Yeah, this is all like, you know.
This is all just
speculation.
Yeah,
at
enjoying
this point.
Like, you know, living a fantasy.
Plans that will never be realized. But the first day is in Boston, and then we're going back down to New York, and then we're heading up to Canada for a few dates, and then looping down through the middle of the country to Texas, and then coming back home. And that's all about 2 weeks long. And then in August we're going to Europe, and that tour is with this awesome band called The Secret. Who, I don't know if you've heard of them.
I don't know them, but I know from Carson that you're doing that tour.
Yeah, we played some dates with them in Europe last year, and that's how we got to. Well, that was like 2 years ago, and that's how we got to meet those guys. And they have a record out on Southern Lord too, so you know, they're out supporting that. They already toured the States, and I'm sure that was good for them. I mean, I know a bunch of people came out to see him when they played here in New York, and we're looking forward to hitting Europe with those guys.
So who's the record release show with in New York?
It's us, A Storm of Light, and Bastard Sapling from Richmond.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Have you heard those guys?
I have. Yeah. Have you heard of Moore?
Oh, dude, they're Elway. That's all I gotta say, man.
One word, Elway.
You know what's really funny is Elway's been living in Richmond for four years now. I think it's like almost 4 years. And I remember when I first saw him in Richmond, Virginia.
His drum set quadrupled in size.
Yeah. But
started doing it in Celebrity Murders. He started getting
the double kick drum and all that, you know. I remember when I went down to Richmond to record with Dave Witte. We were doing we had that band King Generator, which is like a fast punk kind of band. I was down there. It was Best Friends Day, which I don't know if you're familiar with that concept.
Played it once.
It's actually pretty cool. But, you know, I was down there. I'd never heard of Best Friends Day before, and it was that weekend. And Dave, we were recording drum tracks, and Dave was like, hey, let's go down to the lake, you know, to check out Best Friends Day. And I was just thinking, I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know how...
It sounds suspect.
Like not like something I would be into necessarily.
way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, I was like really, really reluctant to go down and be part of this thing. But it actually turned out to be a lot of fun. And again, I loosened up a little bit, and there was a bunch of people there from out of town.
You know who to stay away from.
Yeah, you know, but Richmond's got a different thing, man, than a lot of cities. Richmond's, you know, there's a lot of people that you would see in New York. They have a certain way of carrying themselves, and then maybe like a certain thing about them that you might find, you know, unappealing, and their personality usually reflects that. But when you go to a place like Richmond, pretty much everyone's cool across the board, man. Even the guy with the mustache, the guy wearing like the teal green like low V-neck shirt.
Because he's always been that guy.
Because he's always been that guy. Like he didn't move to New York to like reinvent himself. Like he didn't come to New York. He didn't move to Richmond to reinvent himself. Because he was always a wacko. He was always like the guy that was into that, you know. So yeah, I like Richmond for that reason, and also that's what makes Best Friends Day really cool. Because everyone down there is genuinely into what they're into, and they're not trying to like, you know, find themselves or whatever. So that's when I saw Elway. Was down at Best Friends Day. I saw this like shirtless guy
smiling
with just shorts on and no shoes, and it was Elway. And I was way different than the Staten Island version of Elway. So
he's still that guy. He still claps at the TV and like watches hockey.
Yeah,
and like
totally.
He's still that guy, but.
He's a coach, actually, down in Richmond. He coaches hockey.
I know he plays hockey, too. I know the last Heart of Winterfest, he, like, rolled his ankle playing hockey at some work thing that he was at in Chicago or somewhere. Hurt himself and flew back in to play the next day.
Yeah. And that was, and he was just, you know, he'd had a few beers at that point, and, you know, I hadn't seen him in a while, and he was just telling me how he had to get out of New York and move down there, and it was, like, the best thing in the world. And then he was telling me, like, you should come down here, man. You should move here. You should totally live down here. And you know what it reminded me of, Paul? You ever see Apocalypse Now? Do you remember when... when they go, Captain Willard and his, his group of Navy guys that are in that boat, you know? Yeah, that's the water, man. It's noisy. But the... They go into Colonel Kurtz's compound, and you know there was another guy who'd been sent up the river to take out Kurtz, and that guy failed at his mission, but had gotten absorbed into the group of acid fueled maniacs that like Kurtz was commanding, and when then Captain Willard saw this other guy, that's how I felt when I saw Elway. I felt like Elway had gone to Richmond on some mission. And then he just got absorbed by the culture down there. Because he was, you know, he was like, no shirt on, pair of khaki shorts, no shoes.
And he became
a Richmond guy.
And Avatar. There's a million movies where that, like, you adapt.
He went native. Yeah. He went native. And that was like, you know, it was interesting, man. But yeah, it was, Richmond's a great place, man. I always love going down there. And at this point, you know, I got a bunch of friends. You know, Dave Witte was really my gateway into the whole crew of people down there. But everyone I know down there is like really cool. And shows are always really good in Richmond too. I mean, you guys have been down there. They like metal, they like, you know, punk rock music is really big there. And there's a pretty low quotient of douchebags down
even,
there too.
Even a small show in Richmond, it's always been a small great show.
Yeah,
no, totally. With all the bands I've done too.
But yeah, I mean that's my story with Elway, man. Catching him down in Richmond for the first time, that was like it felt so out of place seeing him there too in that setting, you know. And that was like the only.
He doesn't look it, but no. Maybe shirtless and shoeless he does.
You know, it's I was out of place because I was like extremely white, even though it was like the middle of August. You know, like I didn't catch my summer tan
the
that year.
Farmers like the here to here tan.
Yeah, like everyone down in Richmond, they just have that like tan, you know, laid back kind of vibe down there. You know, so it, you know, it was nice though.
They just played up here too, and I missed them.
Yeah, I remember that. We were coming back from Ithaca. We played recently in Ithaca, New York at the Big Day Out. It's like a small, like sort of, it's a big, it's a big show or a small fest. So it was like one of those deals where there's like a bunch of bands playing and, you know, the guy promoter calls it a fest, but it really isn't.
It's like a long day.
Yeah, it's like a long day. There's a bunch of bands playing. Whoa played from Philly, you know, and they've been really good lately. This is the second time we played with them in like maybe 3 or 4 months, and
I've seen them in over a year.
They're really good. They're really good. I've always, you know, liked their music, but they feel like they've really progressed on this last record and their live thing, because they have a couple of new members. I think it's the dude from
it's the drummer brother combo.
Yep.
And Chris.
Yep, that's correct. And you know, it was a good show. But yeah, we were coming back and you know, Andrew, our drummer, has a lot of roots up there in Ithaca, a lot of connections with people. So our game plan was to leave at 10 o'clock in the morning, but we didn't leave until late afternoon because we just were walking around and like getting food and, you know, drink coffee and that kind of stuff. So we ended up getting back a little too late to catch the Sapling show.
They played two though, right?
I think they only played one show.
They did Staten Island.
The night before, Staten Island with Castavet. And some other bands. Castavet's another great band.
I don't know them. I met one of the guys briefly at some weird art space in Long Island City show.
Well, you know, my old bass player Josh plays in Castavet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the guy I played Anodyne with for about 8 years. He's the bass. He hasn't always been the bass player for Castavet, but he's in the band now, and he's been in the band for like the last almost 2 years, I would say. And we the last tour we did, the run down to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest, the opening dates on that was with Castavet. And it was like I think maybe 4 shows in total, and they were awesome every night. And you know, definitely a band to like to check out. But yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get back in time to check out Bastard Sapling. But you know, hey, I only seen
Rafe
those guys.
Went down there. I believe Rafe went down there.
Oh, good.
And it's like $2 from his house, so no excuse. But I was, me and Janice were out of town for the weekend, so it was one of those things. Like months, I was like, yeah, all right, cool. He has this place Staten Island with him, and I was like, ah, we just can't. It's one of those weekends. It was Gary's birthday weekend too.
So right.
He had shit going on. His birthday's the 6th or 7th, whatever the weekend that was. But yeah, the last couple times. I went and saw them on Easter Sunday, and that was like my good deed. Go see them on a holiday where I could easily just stay home and absolutely do nothing.
And you have like an excuse, you know what I mean? You have like, oh, it's Easter, you know, but...
Yeah, I could bullshit, and then I'm just watching Law & Order.
I wonder how Anathema is doing tonight, man.
Where's that?
I believe it's at Irving Plaza. There was a possibility of Mike calling in, but... I don't think I could technologically work that out right
Speakerphone?
Now. I tried doing that one time for one of this interview I did for Brooklyn Vegan, and it didn't really work out too well. We had to come up with a plan B.
Can you get one of those little suction cup things, like when you used to prank people?
I am.
Radio Shack.
Yeah, I try. I never really had a lot of confidence in those kinds of mics either, so I don't know. But so anyway, I hope, you know, I hope that...
I
hope I see you tomorrow. You know, we don't get destroyed in a earthquake or anything, you know, extreme like that.
New car.
That would be pretty metal, though.
Get the car out of there. That's a way to go.
That would be pretty metal, though, if the world ended
if he was right.
If he was right, that'd be pretty metal, I think. All right, man. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you stopping by tonight.
Absolutely. And,
you know, it's interesting because you might be the last person I ever speak to.
This may be the last thing no one ever hears.
This might be the last thing. You know, you might be the last.
Get this on.
I'm going to try to get tonight. This up so, you know, we can have someone witness this last conversation I might have. So.
11:30. Set your dial. Go buy this on 18.
Buy it, yeah. All right, man. Thanks. Have a good night.
Thank you.